Okay, we'll begin the Midrash, but while we're here, we'll learn a little bit of Mishle as we go along. The Midrash, as usual, is going to begin with the Pasuk that is not in the Chumash, and it will roll it back and apply it to the Parsha. First it won't, it will have another side pshat on that Pasuk, and then it will bring it back to the Parsha. That's usually how it goes, but while we're doing it, we may have to learn a Pasuk in Mishle. Now, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, let's learn the Pasuk. It says, this is continuing from the end of the previous Parsha of Miketz, where the sons of Yaakov Avinu, the brothers of Yosef, are all made aware of the fact that Binyamin is in big trouble. The goblet of the royal goblet of Yosef was found in the package of Binyamin. Now Binyamin is going to be a slave forever, as things appear, and Yehuda steps forward and tries to appeal on his behalf and say, take me and let him go home to his father. Now everyone is standing there, and suddenly one person brings himself closer in his approach to Yosef, and that's Yehuda. Vayigash elav Yehuda. And Yehuda approached toward Yosef, toward him. Which means that, what do you mean, Yehuda? And this is the question that the Midrash is bothered with, according to Yefei Toar. What does it mean that Yehuda approaches him? You want to say Yehuda is speaking, Vayomer Yehuda. That's one thing. But Vayigash means he's far away and he's approaching him. They're all in close proximity, all of the brothers. To say Vayigash, he took a step closer, I mean, I don't need a pasuk for that. Who cares? That's irrelevant. So anyway, Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda approaches him. Vayomer, and he says to Yosef, be Adoni, please, my master. Or please, listen to me, be unto me. But that means, you know, listen to me in a nice way. Yedaber na avdecha davar bazne Adoni. Allow your servant to please speak, or na either means please or it means now. So allow allow your servant, meaning allow me, to speak, please, or to speak now, a word in the ears of my master. And you shouldn't get angry with your servant. Because I hold you in esteem as I hold the king Paro himself. Those are the simple words. I mean, I know those who learn Rashi, who are initiated in Rashi, know what Rashi says on this. Some of what he says is not what I just said. But I'm giving you the simple explanation, because what's relevant is now to see what the Midrash says. And the Midrash, as it does in its style, begins with a pasuk in Mishle, in the Proverbs, and will give an explanation to that pasuk. It's really going to be three psukim, and it's going to roll it back eventually to our parsha. So the pasuk says here, I have it in Mishle, it's the beginning of the sixth chapter. Actually, in one of the other shiurim this morning, in the Gemara, in the ninth parak of Bava Metzia, we also spoke about these psukim, but in a different context. Here it says, Bini, Shlomo HaMelech says, my son, imarafta l'reyecha, if you made yourself a co-signer to your friend. One person lent another money, Reuven lent Shimon money, and you became a co-signer to guarantee the loan. Very often certain co-signers, those who are familiar in Gemara know that sometimes a co-signer may only be approached if the borrower defaults on the loan. And sometimes you have an Orev Kaplan, a co-signer who takes on the debt that the lender has a right to go straight to him. We might be talking about the second type here. That's the simple reading, in my opinion. That's how I always understand it. So im orafta l'reyecha, if you became an orif, if you became a cosigner, and now you are literally responsible for your friend's debt, tokata lazar kapecha, those who know that tekiyas kaf means a handshake. So you shook your hand, you took a handshake for a zar, for a stranger. In other words, for the benefit of someone else who might not be your child or your sibling or your immediate relative, you shook your hand, which is the equivalent of a commitment. There's some Rishonim who say tekiyas kaf, that giving a handshake is like a vow, is like a shvua. So I don't know if you have to go that far over here to go with that opinion, but it is a commitment that no one argues. So if you committed yourself to be a cosigner, to pay a loan, so Shlomo HaMelech is not going to tell you that you're some kind of a Robin Hood. He's going to say, no, Noikashta b'imrei ficha, nilkadeta b'imrei ficha. You have trapped yourself and ensnared yourself with the words of your mouth. You talked, and you have to keep your words now, and that might be to your detriment. You might have a price to pay beyond the loan. So he says, "Asei zos eifo b'ni v'hinotzel." Do the following, my son, and rescue yourself, or separate yourself. Hatzala, Rashi says in Parshas Vayetze, means not only like rescue. The main idea is that you're separating yourself, either from someone or from a situation. So over here, he's saying, you separate yourself from the fix that you're in. You're owing money. Now, does that mean that you're not going to honor the debt? God forbid. You took on the commitment, you have to stick to it. That's not what he's going to say. But he tells you how you have to behave under those circumstances, something that we might not find as part of our mindset. Kivosa b'chafreyecha, once you come into the palm of your friend, you're at his mercy, you owe him, leich hisrapes urahavreyecha. Go and allow yourself to be stepped on by him, which obviously is more figurative. It means humble yourself to him. And then, urahav reyecha, and then let him be strengthened and have a dominion on you. As long as you owe him, you have to be aware of the fact that he's the boss and treat him with humility. That's what's relevant to us over here, these three psukim. Now let's see what is written here in the Midrash. Now, Omar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina says like this: Berach min shalosh v'hi dovek b'sholosh. We'll see if we can fit this into the pasuk. I'm not so sure that I can. But Rabbi Chanina says, "Antloif berach means run away, flee from three situations, but he dove cleave to another three situations. There are three situations worth extricating yourself from, and then there are another three situations that are worth getting involved with. Now, what are these three?" Now, the third one that we're going to see is perfectly relevant to the psukim that we reviewed. Berach min ha-pikdonos. Run away from pikdonos, from securities. People might give you things to watch, and it might be a big mitzvah, but sometimes you have too much, and the responsibility is great to make sure they're taken care of, make sure they're safe and not stolen. Make sure that you don't mishandle them. So, run away from that. That might be too hot to handle. So, don't run away from deposits or securities that people give you to watch. And here Matnas Kahuna says, it means don't do it. Shalola Kabel Piktoinus, says Matnas Kahuna. It means don't accept these securities, don't take the responsibility. Another thing you should stay away from that doesn't really happen today is u and min hamiyunim, from miyun. Now, what is miyun? Miyun would be halachically the equivalent of an annulment of a marriage. How do you annul a marriage? So, min ha-Torah, you don't annul a marriage. But there is a scenario from the sages, from the Chachamim, in the Talmud, where you can annul a marriage. From the Torah, a man can give over his daughter, who is even less than bat mitzvah. She's not yet a bat mitzvah girl. He may give her over to marriage to someone, and that marriage is binding from the Torah. However, if the father would die, even if he didn't die, the same would be true, but the situation is like this. No one else has a right to set up a girl's marriage if she's not bas mitzvah, other than the father. Now, what will be if the father died? And this was quite prevalent in Talmudic times. There was a lot of poverty. The brothers surviving the father's death, as well as the wife, the spouse, who's now widowed, could not necessarily support the little kids. So what they wanted to do is they didn't want to sell their kids into slavery, which anyway didn't apply at that time. That was gone when the Jubilee, when the Yovel was abolished. But they would marry off their young daughters, who were not yet bas mitzvah. So the Chachamim said, midrabbanan, it's a good marriage. But right around the time that the girl reaches bas mitzvah, if she is unhappy, she can say in front of three people that I refuse to remain with this individual. She may even call him a gentleman if she wants, but I don't want to stay with him anymore. And that would be enough to nullify the marriage, as if the marriage didn't happen. So that's the only form of halachic annulment that I can think of. Yes?
So it's kind of similar to like here in America, if you're under the age of 18, look at on the parents, if somebody issues a credit card to an individual, all you need to do is basically null and void.
Yeah. You could draw that similarity if you want. I mean, it's not the exact same thing, but I understand what you're saying, yes. So here it says, though, run away, antloif, as we Yiddish speakers say, run away from miyun, which means you should never encourage your own daughter or someone else's child, another young girl, to do miyun. That's something to be discouraged, because maybe you're talking it into her. If she wants to leave, she wants to leave. But don't talk it into her. Don't train her for that. She might be sorry one day that she did it. What do you need that? You know, a lot of times in general, giving people advice that they might regret one day is less than clever, just to be kind. Yes?
The fact that it happened after she's married, the same thing, the fact before she's married and say, no, I don't want to marry this individual.
If she says it, fine. But if I go and talk it out of her, that might not be good advice. But when there's a miyun that she was already married to the guy, and she just refused to remain, that when, who knows, down the road she'll be 17, 18, 27 years old and she'll regret it. She'll look back at her life and regret it. And it'll be all my fault. You know, that's what you should stay away from. Apparently that was prevalent at that time. Now the third one, we were discussing now in Mishlei. Stay away from the third one. Ooh, and also stay away milasi sarevus peinodom lachavero, to make yourself a cosigner. They're having their transaction, if you will. One party is lending the other money. What do I have to get inside and be an unsolicited hero to try to be a cosigner? It's between the two of them. If they're not asking me, it's certainly not wise. But even if they're asking me, you know, why should I get involved and have a debt over my head like that? I mean, I've personally known of people who have done that and have lived to regret it. So it's a wise thing to stay away from doing that. It's a lot of things that look like mitzvahs are not always mitzvahs. My Rebbe Hagoyin Reb Nochum, is my main Rebbe in Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, is the famous Magachir Reb Nochum, used to say, "Amolus loinzach nicht zu sein a guter." He used to say, "Sometimes it's not worth it to be good, to be too good or good when you shouldn't be good. It's not clever." So these are three such times. Reb Hanina is telling us, sometimes it's not worth it to be good. What should we be involved in? When is it gelungen? When is it worth it to be good? So he gives us three examples that are obviously not common. He's not talking about common things. Your neighbor needs a cup of milk. We're not talking about that. Of course, that's something you should do. We don't need Rabbi Hanina for that. But what should we be involved in that sometimes might not be so easy or so good? You know, those are the things you need a Reb Hanina to teach us. Something looks good, it looks noble, but Reb Hanina says, no, stay away from it. Very often people ask Rabbonim, not necessarily me, also though it might happen to me once in a while too. People will ask me something and it seems noble, and I tell them the magic words in Yiddish, stay avek. Stay away from it. Yeah, that's in Yiddish. I mean, those who don't speak Yiddish, I say it in English. But shtei avek means stay away. Sometimes it looks good and tempting. Stay away. I don't say run away. That's Reb Hanina is big enough to say run away. But at least I can say stay away. Now, what is he going to tell us to be involved in? What should we cleave to? So he tells us three things. The first one is he dovek b'chalitza. Cleave to chalitza. Although we pray at the end of chalitzas that Jewish women shouldn't come to chalitza, yiratzin shetavoyna b'nais shelo tavoyna b'nais yisrael lidei chalitza. But still, once in a while there are chalitzas. Now, what is chalitza? That is, if in the law of the Torah a man is married to a woman and unfortunately passes away with no children, so the surviving brother of the deceased husband has a mitzvah to marry his brother's widowed wife. He's the brother-in-law, the Yavam. He will marry the Yavama. But what'll be if he doesn't want to marry her? He does chalitza. That's when she puts on a special shoe. I have one in my possession. I didn't bring it with me, but they have a special shoe that the man puts on. There are certain halachas about the shoe and how he puts it on, and the woman has to untie it and take it off the way we tied it on. She has to untie it, she has to remove the sandals and yank the shoe off his foot and throw it away and spit in his presence. That's chalitza. Now, what will be if a woman is in a situation that it's either chalitza or yibum? Now, the truth is the man has to decide. That's the main halacha. The man has to decide that. So we say, cleave to chalitza. If you can advise someone to do chalitza, that's always better. That's even a good unsolicited advice. Mostly in life, unsolicited advice isn't always wise. There are cases where the Chofetz Chaim says you should do it. Okay, those are, I think in my life, those are exceptions. But generally, stay away from giving people unsolicited advice, unless you're begging to have enemies. You know, that's different. If you want to have an enemy, do it. But most of the time, it's not wise to offer unsolicited advice. Sometimes we have to keep things to ourselves. However, when a person is in a situation and we're someone who can influence the situation, we tell them, opt for chalitza. The reason is because there is the opinion of Abba Shaul, which is why today very rarely will a yibum happen, that we will allow a man, the surviving brother, to marry the deceased's widow. Very rarely. I haven't had in my generation one situation. the situation would only be where you would have Yibum would be if the Yavum doesn't have arms, so the woman doesn't have arms, or the Yavum doesn't have a leg to fit the chalitza shuan. The woman doesn't have an arm to do chalitza. Then there's no choice and you do Yibum, but even in our times. But all things equal, as unfortunate as that situation isn't an all things equal situation, but where you have an all things equal chalitza, everyone has their limbs and their health, thank God. So we opt out of Yibum and we encourage chalitza. Why? Because it could be, we're concerned with the opinion of the Tana Abba Shaul, and Abba Shaul said that there is something near, maybe his thoughts are not entirely for the sake of the mitzvah. He might have other thoughts, which need not be explained. The man may have other thoughts in having, when and if having intimacy with his brother's deceased sister. And Abba Shaul used strong terms. Korav beina liyos havlad mamzer. He said if they would have a child from that relationship, the child would be like close to me to being illegitimate. Halachically, he's not illegitimate. But what Abba Shaul was saying is, a man is not permitted to be with his brother's wife except in this situation. Had she had children, she's forbidden for him eventually to remarry. If she was divorced from his brother, he would never be allowed to marry her either. So she's an erva. She's normally forbidden. For this purpose, the Torah permitted it. So Abba Shaul was concerned if there's anything, any type of motive on the part of the surviving brother, then it's not being done entirely for the mitzvah, so it somewhat reverts back to the original prohibition. So the Mefarshim say that this midrash is going with Abba Shaul, encourage chalitza. Tell the lady, tell the man, chalitza, chalitza, chalitza. What's that? Beis Din will refuse to do it in our times, yeah. Every Beis Din refuses. That's based on Abba Shaul, and the Rambam in Bechoiris, in his Perish HaMishnayis, goes very strongly advocating Abba Shaul. And the poskim in our times, are not in our, for centuries already, have taken that view.
Yes.
She can't do it. The Gemara says a gidemet is psula l'chalitza. There's no way she can do chalitza, even with an artificial limb. Then there's yibum. There's no choice.
That could be in our generation.
Yeah, that could be in our generation. Then I just never lived to have such a case, and I didn't hear in my time ever of such a case.
So what if she doesn't?
Yeah.
Okay,
then it's a problem. He's going to have to do, even where polygamy and bigamy is illegal, they're going to have to, for the religious reason, he's going to have to do a yibum and then give her a get. That's how we do it today. So it's in and out. So it's done for religious reasons. So you're not opposing the state in that way. That's how it works. I mean, I have that principle in a number of halachas, based on a tshuva in Chassam Sofer, by of all places, by Mechiras Chometz, that when we're doing something for a religious reason, even though technically it seems against the law of the land, like if there are areas, the Chassam Sofer's cases, how can you have Chometz in your possession and sublet the area to a non-Jew? Apparently there were places, and this is what the Chassam Sofer was consulted about, there are places where it was against the law to sublet. If you're renting, you weren't allowed to sublet your apartment for any purpose. So the Chassam Sofer says that since you're only doing it for religious purposes, I was going to say sacramental, but I mean really for religious purposes, and to get out of a problem with your religion, but you're not formally renting it, and it's only there as long as you need it to be rented, That is not considered against the law, and governments would allow that. So that helps in various cases, even here, of things that I don't want to go off on a tangent with, but I've used that for other things. Yeah. Anyway, so he says the second thing to cleave to is hafaras nedarim, nullifying vows. Sometimes a woman will make a vow, and her father, if she's still below 12, or a naira, she's below 12 and a half, she'll make a vow that is of some form of deprivation. When we learn the last chapter of Nedarim, we'll see more about it. But a deprivation, or in addition to that, if she's married, she has something that will interfere in her marriage relationship with her husband. The day the husband hears that she made that vow, he's permitted to nullify the vow. That's something, even though it's not maybe our business, we have the right to encourage the person to nullify his wife or daughter's vow. That's something we may offer our unsolicited advice and encouragement.
It's an example of a vow.
She makes a vow that she's not going to eat any more chicken soup. And chicken soup is important. She's not going to have a chunk or any other food that she normally eats. So that's inui nefesh, it's called. That's self-deprivation. So the father, if the girl is the right age, or a husband and wife, a husband toward a wife, may nullify that vow. Yes? Engaged? Well, engaged then, naraha murasa, did not mean what engagement today is. What engagement then meant was the first step of marriage today. The man gives the woman something of value. We do give her a ring. And he said, hareyat mekudeshet. That's what engagement is. But until the man and the woman would be together, that would be, in those days, 12 months would be between the time he gave her the ring and until he consummated the marriage. The consummation is called nisuin. Once there's nisuin, that's a different story. But when she is engaged, the Mishnah says both the father and the man to whom she's engaged have the right to nullify the vow. Naraha murasa aviya uvala mefirin nedareha. No, there would be a get. If a man just gave a woman kiddushin, and then let's say they waited for 12 months for nisuin, like they did in those times, and he decided, or they decided they don't want to stay, they don't want to consummate, they need a get. That's she's not allowed to be with anyone during that time. That's even more severe. If she would, God forbid, be intimate with someone, she's punished with stoning. If there are witnesses and warning, that warrants stoning. If a woman after the nisuin was committed the adultery, God forbid, it's horrible, but her death is a lighter death of strangulation. So there are stringencies there. Now the third one where we can mix in, although, you know, to be practical, you have to know what you're doing, is uvahavo shalom bein adam lachaveiro. To bring peace between one man and another. People are having a machloket, so theoretically, and sometimes if you're the right person, practically, you can get involved and intervene and bring peace between the two, even though you weren't asked to do so. Although, practically speaking, I don't know what was 1,000 years ago, but today that's not always the smart thing to do, unless you really know how to do it. But if you're one who can do it and knows how to do it and have reason to believe that you can be helpful, then that's something that Rabbi Hanina encourages you to cleave to that practice, to be a peacemaker. But only be a peacemaker, I'm telling you, out of the box, if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, you might make it worse. I've seen things, and that's why I say that. Okay, now, Omar Rabbi Berechia, Omar Rabbi Shimon bar Abba. Rabbi Berechia says in the name of, oh, it's late already, of Reb Shimon Bar Abba. You're more generous. Leshmei Pikodin Ela Pok Dein. He talks about the first thing to stay away from. He says it's not called Pikodin, which means remembering or security, but it's Pok Dein. Poke it out. Poke in Aramaic means take it out. It's not P-O-K-E, but poke means, or pook means take out. Dain is this. Take it out. In other words, don't be the good guy and take people's piktonot. Sometimes that gets out of hand, and it's not always good advice to be the one to do that as a favor. If you're professionally doing it, it might be different. But we'll see another interpretation soon. Yes? What would what be called? Well, people pay you. There are places that have security, that they guard things, they lock them in special whatever. People do that with furniture and with other things. That's a professional. But there's another pshat, pok dein, means, pok is really from the Hebrew, that pok din. It means people remember. In other words, if they know that I'm a fella who keeps other people's securities in my house, who knows? Maybe I'm a walking Swiss bank with what I hold for people. Who knows? So people are gonna always keep me in their crosshairs. They're gonna look at me. They're gonna say, "Hey, how do we take money out from him? We're asking for." People to come and steal. Everybody knows I have this fella's valuable watch and that woman's jewelry and this one's sapphire and this one's who knows what, and that one has some kind of a rare computer or something, although today that might not be so rare. They're going to come and break in. They're going to think about how are we going to get through this guy's house and have, you know, nice merchandise to steal and declare as our own. So you're asking for trouble. Yeah, you shouldn't do that.
So then if I become a wealthy man, what about thinking the same thing? I'm a wealthy man.
Well, you have to... Yeah, but there you became a wealthy man. But here I'm offering people favors. That might be too hard for me. You know, you can't bite off more than you can chew. If you're already wealthy, you'll take. I mean, I always used to feel bad for very wealthy people as a kid. I'm from LA, and I used to take long walks because I had friends or other reasons in Beverly Hills, and I used to see bars on all the windows. I said to myself, I don't want to live that way. But the fact is, some of the very well-known people that they sell maps to their homes have that all over in security and whatever. Some parts of Beverly Hills, I remember Bel Air, you couldn't get in and you had to go past armed guards. And they had to call in and make sure, you know, that to me that's not a way to live. But the people who have that type of wealth do things to guard themselves. But in general, that you undertake these type of things when it might be too hot to handle, that's not good advice. That's what the Midrash is talking about. Okay, now Dovar Acher, now we're going to finally come to our Parsha Yehuda. Now we're going to swing back to the Pasuk in Mishlei. Bini, my son, imarafta l'reyecha, if you make yourself responsible for your friend, is a reference, Zeh Yehuda. That is Yehuda. That Yehuda said to his father Yaakov, Anochi ervenu, I will take responsibility for Yosef, for Binyamin. And he said, Anochi ervenu, miyodi tavakshenu, in last week's Parsha. So, I'll be verantwortlich, I'll be responsible for Binyamin, Anochi ervenu. So, tokata lazor kapecha. In that case, you took a handshake for a stranger or for somebody else. What does that mean? Miyodi tavakshenu. From my hand, you will demand him, which is what Yehuda did going to Yosef, who for all intents and purposes at that time was a stranger to Yehuda. And he said, I'm going to go get him. But no kashta bimreficha. You set up your own trap with the words of your mouth, which was what Yehuda said to his father, and that's what the Midrash refers back to. Yehuda said, "In lo have Yosef elecha, if I will not bring him to you, I won't return to you with Binyamin, then v'chatasi lecha kol hayomim. I'm sinning to you all days, including this world and the next world." So what does it mean then? So what it means is, lech v'hidovek ba'afar ragla. This is again a fragment of the Pasuk in Mishlei. Do this, my son, and rescue yourself. You're already in debt. And this is going to explain why Yehuda, who was himself kingly and mighty, was humbling himself to Yosef here. When he approached, even though he was the one who was the king and the mightiest of the brothers, the most outstanding, Ata Yeducha Achecha, but he went and he humbled himself more than the other brothers because of that responsibility. So he followed what Shlomo HaMelech said. You're at the mercy of Yosef. He's the one you're owing to now, to this prime minister. Lech v'hidovek b'afar raglav. Go and cleave to the legs, to the earth of his legs. V'kabel malchusoy v'adnuso. Accept his kingdom and his sovereignty over you, his mastership over you. And that explains, this is the end of the Midrash, Vayigashel of Yehuda. Yehuda approached him. Yehuda approached more than anyone else. They were all there. He came closer and humbled himself. Because right now, as mighty as Yehuda was, even in comparison to his brothers, who each one, Rashi said in last week's Parsha, Melamed Shekulam Gibayrim Hoyu, they were all very mighty. Yehuda was more outstanding than all of them. However, he humbled himself even more than his brothers because he owed Yosef at this point. He knew Binyamin was at the mercy, was going to be indentured to the prime minister of Egypt. Yehuda didn't want that to happen because of his responsibility to his father. So he made himself, put himself at the mercy of Yosef.